Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest and You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. And with the midterm primary elections about a month away, we're interviewing the Republican candidates vying for their party's nomination in the 2nd Congressional District. We want your questions, especially if you live in the 2nd District. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org, or use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Our candidate today is Republican Lynn Blankenbecker, a former state lawmaker, a nurse, and a veteran who has served overseas, including most recently in Afghanistan. Ms. Blankenbecker, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's start with a bit of recent reporting by ProPublica on the Department of Veterans Affairs. The investigative news organization found that three close acquaintances of President Trump's have been exerting some influence on the VA, despite the fact that they've not served in the U.S. military or the government. The White House said they have no direct influence over the VA, but ProPublica has obtained documents indicating they are deeply involved. First question is, have you heard of this? And if you have, if you were in Congress right now, what would your response be?
Well, no, I had not heard of this. And you know, I think the Veterans Administration is a hot topic right now, especially everything that's gone on in the state of New Hampshire. I think our president has done a really good job as he's worked towards draining the swamp and has worked towards getting those ineffective leaders out of the VA, and so that we can get effective leadership in so that we can provide the services to our veterans that they are entitled to.
Should the president's friends, people who are visiting him at Mar-a-Lago, have deep involvement in the VA, as ProPublica alleges?
You know, I think that, you know, as the president makes decisions, the president should get information from everywhere that he needs to get information from. I'm not really familiar with who these friends are or what this allegation is or if there's even any legitimacy to it. So I really can't comment on that.
Mm-hmm. Let's a few more questions about the VA. How would you define and then address the challenges faced by the VA if you were in Congress?
Well, I think the VA has become an enormous bureaucracy, and I think that leadership has not been held accountable for a very long time for what's been going on at the VA. And I think that, you know, our veterans certainly, as I said before, deserve the best that they can have. And for me, you know, I just really want to take a proactive stance in ensuring that we align the benefits through the VA that we have that should be available for our veterans, that we make sure that they have access to that. Access means, you know, cutting through the red tape, getting rid of the bureaucracy, that folks can get to, for example, the care that they need, whether it's Veterans Choice and letting them go outside the VA system to get their care, or improving the access and improving the quality of care in our VA so that they can get the kind of care they need.
Mm-hmm. As a nurse in the military, you've seen what combat does to military members, both physically, emotionally. How would these experiences affect your work in Congress?
Well, you know, I have a very soft spot, obviously, for our wounded warriors, especially having cared for them on the battlefield in Afghanistan and during Desert Shield and Desert Storm, and being mobilized for support of Iraqi freedom as well. I care for these people over in the battlefield, and you know, we care our care is very good, and certainly I bond with each of these patients in some way, shape, or form, each of these veterans. And so it is disheartening for me that when they come home, they're not getting a continuation of that great quality care that we give them over there. And certainly, I would definitely make it a priority.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the role of Congress should be when it comes to war? Some have said our executive branch has too much authority when it comes to waging war and that Congress should reassert its authority. Do you agree with that sentiment?
Well, I mean, the Constitution is clear on who what the responsibilities are of Congress, and certainly that is one of the responsibilities of Congress is declaration of war. So I don't think that the president has overstepped his responsibilities, but certainly would hope that Congress would continue to follow their constitutional mandates.
Let's talk a little bit about health care, because you've mentioned one of your top priorities is fixing health care, finding a replacement for the Affordable Care Act. What would you replace it with?
Well, I don't actually, as far as replacement goes, I don't think the government should be in the business of providing health care for this nation. The government's not good at running many things. We look at so many of the federal programs that are failing on their intended purposes. Really, what I want to look at is ways that we can improve health care in this nation from an access standpoint, from an affordability standpoint, and from an accountability standpoint. And so the ways that we do that is by reducing cost, by taking a check on big pharma, tort reform, reimbursement, those sorts of things, insurance, being able to purchase your insurance across state lines so that providing a competitive insurance market to drive that cost down. From an accessibility standpoint, we really need to stop overregulating so that the bureaucracy for getting through to get your insurance or to get your care, we need to, to step back on some of that regulation. And then, of course, accountability. We need value-based care. Healthcare providers today need to be able to provide good quality care and be accountable for that good quality care. Also, from an access standpoint, we are seeing a decline in the number of people who are going into those medical professions. And so we need to make sure that, and part of that is because of overregulation and making it impossible, and certainly the cost of education. So we need to drive that cost down as well and incentivize more people to go into the profession so that you and I can access healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular regulation that you in Congress would work to eliminate?
Oh, though they go on and on.
Too many to name?
Let's look at HIPAA, for example. I think HIPAA is actually starting to harm patients. Me as a nurse, as a healthcare provider, even in the civilian sector or in the private sector like you and I go to on a day-to-day basis, there are such tight constraints with HIPAA for accessing patients' medical records that even as a provider, sometimes I can't get to the information I need. And I could actually harm somebody if I give them a medication, for example, that interacts with the medication that I don't know that they're already taking. So HIPAA is one of those. The electronic health record. The electronic health record mandate is taking providers away from the bedside and putting them in front of a computer. We need to get our providers back to the bedside and caring for those patients. We'd see higher quality care with that.
Mm-hmm. There's been widespread support for requiring health insurance companies to cover people with pre-existing conditions and not charge them more for it. What's your view on that?
Well, I think that, insurance companies are, it's like anything. If you have a bad accident history, the insurance company is taking a risk with you, right? But I think that there are ways that insurance companies can put people into different pools so that they can drive down their costs. And so a mandate saying, telling an insurance company what they can charge for their rates because of a particular condition or a group of people is really akin to telling everybody what you have to pay for a minimum wage, for example, and so you don't have an opportunity to have any wiggle room in that. And so I'm not really inclined to passing legislation for something like that. I'd rather see incentivizing insurance companies in other ways.
What about a law that would, say, require a hospital to sort of advertise the costs of the things that it does?
Well, I certainly am all about transparency, and I absolutely think that folks need to know what they're paying for, especially if you are a person who wants to pay for and negotiate your own care with your provider. These concierge medical practices that are so wonderful, that are working well for a lot of folks, where you go in and you pay $100 a month or $1,400 a year to a particular provider, that's transparent. They know what they're paying and they know what they're getting.
Mm-hmm. But those providers don't necessarily provide everything. Like, for example, a surgery. People sometimes leave this country and go to other countries to get surgery that's more affordable because they simply can't afford it here. Is it possible for Congress to pass a law that would say, okay, surgeries cost, just for hospitals to say, this is what a particular surgery costs, so a consumer can make an informed choice?
I'm not into the cookie cutter. I don't think that a one size fits all for everybody. If you have your appendix out and you have a very complicated appendix surgery for whatever reason, and it costs, the provider, and you have a prolonged hospital stay, and I have a very easy appendix procedure that, you know, I'm in and out of the OR in 22 minutes and I'm out of the hospital within 12 hours, you know, should I pay the same thing that you're paying? And, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to go. I would say no. But again, I'm not about overregulating. And so passing law after law after law after law to mandate how somebody practices medicine or how a business does business really isn't good for America.
Let's talk a little bit about the economy. You've expressed concern about wasteful government spending. What kind of spending would you like to see cut?
Well, I think we need to look at spending across the board. There's no doubt that, you know, some of our budgets haven't been looked at spending across the board in a very long time. And so what we need today may not be what we needed 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
So what do we need to cut today?
Well, like I said, I don't have the budget in front of me. I haven't gotten to Congress yet, so I can't
But the budget's publicly available. You, right, as a candidate, may have an opinion on what should be there and what should not be there.
Right. Well, I'm not saying that we should take anything wholesale away, but we certainly, you know, looking at the details of a budget, for example, when we start looking at some of the administrative agencies and what we finance there, you know, where do we trim from the Department of Energy? I don't know, but we may need to trim. We need to look at that. Where do we trim from the Department of Education? Maybe somewhere. I don't know. Where do we trim from the Department of Defense? You know, I need experts who are telling me where they're spending their money and if that makes sense. And so we need to look at that as a whole. I can't really comment on, oh, I'll take away $25 from, you know, human resources of the United States military and I'll take $50 away from the Department of Education and we'll put that into, you know, the Department of Energy because we're not financing. I can't give you that kind of granularity right now.
Does the same go for entitlements? Do you have opinions on whether or not some entitlements need to go?
Well, I think that we certainly need to look at the entitlements program and we need to make sure that they're getting to the intended recipients and in the intended amounts. Let's face it, there's a lot of fraud going on in those programs. And I think our president has done a really good job in starting to look at ways that we can better manage that. You know, for example, the drug testing and maybe putting in a workforce requirement, you know, that you're showing an effort towards getting a job or that you are working or, you know, and we need to means test. We certainly need to look at means testing. We need to look at all of those things. So, you know, yeah, that needs an overhaul. We need to take a look.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When it comes to the national debt, the Congressional Budget Office estimates that the $1.5 trillion tax cut championed by the president and passed by Congress will increase the national debt by $1.9 trillion by 2028. The deficit's now expected to top $1 trillion starting next year. This is one way to frame the tax cut. There are other ways to frame it, of course, but do you support the tax cut bill?
Absolutely. You know, the tax cut has done great things for the Granite Staters, and my job as a representative in this state is to represent the Granite Staters. The other day I was knocking on doors. I stopped at a gentleman's house, and he asked me how I felt about President Trump, and I told him I thought some of his policies have been very, very good, and I talked about the tax cuts. And that gentleman actually, like, came out of his door and hugged me, and he said to me, you know, my wife makes $100 more a week now because of the tax cuts. And it wasn't just the tax cut, but what it did for her employer. And her employer was able to give her a raise. And he said, you know, for the first time ever, we've been able to purchase a new car. That is putting real dollars into Granite Staters' pockets and making their quality of life better. And I think that's good. And we all know that when the economy is doing well and when people are doing well, they're out there, they're buying the cars, they're eating in the restaurants, they're utilizing those public services. And that is going to drive down the deficit because that's going to drive up the revenue.
That is not exactly what the Congressional Budget Office is saying. And some conservatives are concerned about the level of debt, essentially borrowing from the future to pay for these tax cuts now and give those people, like you mentioned, an extra $100.
Well, you know, I don't think that this is really going to drive up the deficit. And I'd really like to dive into this a little bit more, you know, when I am in Congress. But I will tell you that it's been shown time after time after time again, when the economy is good and the country is doing well, that the deficit is driven down. And so I'm going to trust that this is going to continue on the same trends as it has before, and that we're going to see a long-term effect that's going to be positive for the nation.
Let's talk about immigration while we have a few minutes left. What is your view of the policy that separated families at the border?
Well, you know, obviously, I don't want to see any family separated, and I certainly feel for children, no doubt. But, you know, those families that came across the border illegally knew what they were getting into. And I don't hear any public outcry against the the families that have victimized those children? Where's the accountability on the folks who knowingly
Who victimized the children?
Their parents.
The parents victimized the children.
Well, when you knowingly come across the border illegally, knowing that there is an opportunity that you can be separated from your children, yes, those parents have some accountability. They needed to come across the border legally, or they needed to, you know, I mean, there has to be some accountability. Don't keep coming back and attacking the government for enforcing laws that we've had on the books for decades.
Mm-hmm. The president wants to build a wall. Do you support that?
Absolutely. I support a figurative wall. I support a literal wall. I support securing our borders. We have porous borders that's letting drugs into this country. We have porous borders that are letting, you know, gangs into this country. And just like you and I assume you lock your door at night because you want to know who's coming in your house, right? And this is effectively locking your doors at night and making sure that the people we want in our country and that we embrace in our country come in, and keeping the bad actors out. And so, yes, I think there's perfect areas to build a literal wall. I think there are great areas that we can use electronic surveillance. I think there's a perfect opportunity to put boots on the ground and put another barrier there. So, yes, I do support protecting our country.
A couple more questions, Lynn Blankenbecker, before the end of the program. If elected, how would you go about convincing fellow members of Congress to, in your words, stop bickering?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, I come with a military background, 32 years in the United States military, where we have worked, despite our differences, our religious differences, our political differences, even the difference in the color of our uniforms. But we all, million of us, come together and work together for one thing, and that's to protect and defend this great nation and our Constitution. And if a million people in uniform can do that, certainly 435 people in Congress can do that. You know, Congress takes a very similar oath that the military does. We are just, this to me is same oath, different mission. And fortunately for me, I've been endorsed by War Veterans Fund. I've already started building coalitions with like-minded candidates like me across the nation who are wanting to bring this ethos of working together and getting the work done for America because of our mission orientation. And so the way I look at it, I'm going with reinforcements. I've already got a group of people. When we all get elected and we get there, we're ready to roll up our sleeves and get to work for all Americans, regardless of your party.
A question from a listener to end the program. Hayden wrote to ask, would you push for or support legislation decriminalizing recreational marijuana usage at the federal level? And would you seek to remove marijuana from the list of Schedule I substances?
So, you know, there's a lot of talk about the marijuana. I certainly do support legalizing marijuana for medicinal purposes. I think that there's... Is that music? Are we done?
We are almost done. Oh. Feel free to wrap up your thought.
Okay. Yes. I certainly would support legalizing medicinal marijuana. I think it's got a lot of benefit for our folks who are suffering. Sounds like my time is up.
Well, Lynn Blankenbecker, we appreciate you taking the time. We wanted to get as many of your policy positions out before the end of the show. So, yeah, we really appreciate it.
Thank you.
This has been the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR, production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers, Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Music composed by Bob Lord. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening, and have a great weekend.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.